Hello and welcome to the Barack World Show, the longest running web design podcast, where we look at user experience design, conversion optimization, and working in the web. And no, Marcus, I have no idea why I said it that way. It just came out
well,
like that.
Well, longest running means something, longest, I think.
Yeah.
In the world.
I went very Jeremy Clarkson on
you
it,
did,
didn't I?
Yes.
Yeah. On this week's show, we're going to discuss how to avoid the pitfalls of metrics. We're going to look at a Figma plugin to make your mockups more realistic and why AI will revitalize the UX profession. So as you will have already gathered, I'm being joined by Marcus Lillington and my name is Paul Boag. Hello, hello,
la, la,
hello.
La, 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 hello, hello, and yes. But yes, how am I? Yes, I can tell you how I am, Paul. I'm going on holiday in the morning.
I did not ask you how you were.
You weren't going to miss that one, though. La, la, la. I literally don't care. I've just edited one from two weeks ago, which is us two just before Christmas going, la, 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 we don't care.
So, and you're now back in the same
doing
place.
It again. I'm going skiing.
Tell me. Yes,
skiing in
it.
Austria.
Lovely.
Really early tomorrow morning heading off, so that's great. Although as you can probably tell from my voice and my coughing, I'm still not perfectly over a cold.
Get over it. We've reached the age now where something is constantly wrong. So it's almost not worth mentioning anymore.
I know what you mean. Although I've not had a cold, and I know the last time I had a cold because it really hit me hard, and it was when Michelle was away. So I had no sympathy whatsoever. That was back in May. So, you know, it's not like you have one every month. She's had COVID twice since then, and I've just not got it. So,
that's just showing off, isn't it?
Yeah,
to have COVID these days. I mean, it's so 2020 getting COVID.
I don't think that's true, Paul.
No, I know, but you know,
but it sounds good. But anyway, yes. So, I'll be all right. I'm going on holiday. What else?
You don't care.
No. What do you care about, Paul? What do you care about?
My life's just gone mad. It's like suddenly everybody's come out of the woodwork and gone, we want this tomorrow, Paul. Oh, and by the way, we've got some more work for you. I can't keep up.
Well, that's a good thing, though.
Well, yes, it is a good thing. Well, there's no pleasing you. When you run your own business, there's no pleasing. Either it's too busy or too quiet. It's never just right.
Yeah, but too busy is probably, well, not probably better. It's definitely
better
because you can just make it last longer if you can't do it all. You know?
Well,
hard.
Exactly.
I know. It's just tricky, but...
Yeah, you are right. I also had an ethical dilemma this week, which was an interesting one.
Okay, so things like that don't normally bother you, Paul, but...
Yes, it was a dilemma of why would you teach a man to fish when you could keep selling him fish?
Right.
It was one of those scenarios. So I had a client who was like, oh, I'm really struggling with this, Paul. Can you help and do a load of this work? And I was like, yeah, actually, you could really do it very easily yourself if I just taught you how I did it with ChatGPT. And so that's what I had to do in the end, because, you know, despite what you may say, I am conscientious and, you know, and so I had to teach you. And it's like, oh, that would have been really good work. I would have enjoyed doing that. But no, didn't get to.
Though that is definitely the right thing to do, Paul. Not everybody, even if they say they want to learn, wants to learn.
Yeah.
And I think that's something... That's something that it's a lesson I still, and I and all the people at Headscape and other people I'm sure that work in agencies, just assume that people want to do all the content on their website and all that kind of thing, but
actually
they'd much rather do something else.
No.
And so we give them all these lovely tools, and it's like, well, and you can hear them sort of, you know, in the backs of their minds going, can't you do it? Oh, go on.
Yeah. And we're half of my work, you know, I say that I'm a consultant and I am a consultant. I go in and I consult and I teach people how to do all of this stuff. But the number of times they just turn around and say, yeah, I don't really want to do that. Will you do it for me, Paul? And I just go away and do it.
Yeah.
So, but on this particular occasion, he was like, this is brilliant. I could do this. And
damn
so it's like, damn. How dare he?
But well done, Paul, for doing the right thing.
Yeah, this is why
Angel
I felt the need to bring
for you.
This is why I felt the need to bring it up on the podcast, because it so rarely happens that I do the right thing. That it was newsworthy, you know. Anyway, let's talk about an app. I found a really good app this week, which I really like.
So have I, interestingly.
Oh, have you? What have you found? Let's do you first. Go on. Well,
the problem is mine's got nothing to do with UX design.
Oh, well, that's no good then. What is it? I won't include it in the show notes, but you can still tell me what it is.
It's a skiing app.
Oh, for crying. Of course it is.
Because I'm going skiing.
And normally, are you going skiing?
Normally these things are shockingly bad, like useless. Throw it in the bin, you know, it's like rubbish. But it's, well, I'm going to a place called St. Anton in Austria, and it's the whole area is called Arlberg, and it's the app is called Ski Arlberg. And it's got the best interactive piste map I've, and that works offline. So when you're up on the mountain,
great.
And you can put in any 2 points on the mountain, any run, any restaurant or whatever, and it'll tell you how to go from there to there, and it'll show it you on the map. And it works beautifully on your phone. Normally, you need a big piece of paper like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, just sort of all. The only reason
so a good bit of UX design then, really.
Exactly. It sort of re-highlighted to me the value of good design. That was it, really. And it was like, well done them. Sometimes it can happen.
Yes. Yeah. There are good apps in the world.
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, this app that I found is actually a Figma plugin. And it's a really good one. You know when you do mock-ups and... you're mocking up a page, and maybe you've got like a series of news stories, or you've got a whole series of profile pictures of people, or, you know, different listing users or whatever, any kind of list. And it's like you end up just repeating the same thing. So you have the same names down or the same news titles. And what this plugin will do is it will create realistic text to go in all of those. So it can create names, addresses, email addresses, whatever you need it to, in all of those different formats that you require, and pre-populate the list. Now, this is good for two reasons. It's good because it means that when customers, clients and stakeholders look at it, it's more realistic, and they don't go, oh, is everything the same? Because they, you know.
This is fantastic. I didn't read your notes here, Paul, because I don't.
But of course not.
Well, sometimes I do. But I was like, oh, Paul can talk about that. It's Figma. I don't use Figma. But it's a bugbear of mine massively that when we're presenting design work, that it's just repeat, 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 repeat. Because it doesn't really test the design.
Well, that's the second point, is that if you put in, let's take you, for example, Marcus Lillington, right? Mm-hmm. Not a short name, is it? Right?
Marcus Brian John Lillington.
Oh my word, I never knew that.
Lord Marcus. Lord, I am a Lord, actually. Lord Marcus Brian John Lillington. There you go.
You're only a Lord because somebody bought one off the internet for you.
I own about a 6 inches square of a little patch of Scotland somewhere.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a bit of a joke.
Yes. Anyway, your email address is particularly bad, right, in terms of length. Yeah. marcus.lillington@headscape.co.uk.
Correct.
Right, old mouthful. So, see, those kinds of things won't necessarily get picked up unless you're populating it with real, in inverted commas, data, you know, with a variety of data. So absolutely, you know, that's why I love this app. Great little app. Love it. Good. Nothing else to say.
I'm going
to
share that with the rest of the
guys. Oh, I haven't given its name.
Yeah, well, that was my next question, because I won't be able to share it until I know what it is, Paul.
It's called Quick Fill. And I'll put a link in the show notes, which will be at boag.world/13.
Yep.
He's just trying to remember what number we're on of the new generation. So, yes, that's that. That's all I wanted to share on that. So let's move on to the topic for today, which are metrics and about how we use metrics within organizations. And I've picked this as a subject. No, it's not the most interesting of subjects, although some people get very excited about metrics. But
Chris does.
Chris, he does. Yes.
He really does.
Actually, I'm kind of going that way as well.
I think everyone does, especially if it can sort of, you know, tell you what you want to hear. I did cynically read some of the points you make here, and I did wonder, have your clients not been listening to you, Paul?
Oh, of course not.
Yeah, so well, so they've been saying, Paul, no, all we want to know is this. And you've been going, but that's rubbish. And they go, no, all we want to know is this.
Yeah. I mean, it's not so much like that. But I have worked with a large number of organizations that have certain metrics that they track. And it's completely skewed the whole direction of the company as a result. Let's back up for a minute. So, you know, to start off, I want to make it clear that metrics are a critical tool for project success. We absolutely should be using them. But today I want to talk about the kind of dangers of metrics, how you can use them wisely, and really their broader role in decision making. So let's start off with where things can go wrong, right? So it's very easy to choose poor metrics, first of all, right? So, you know, for example, an insurance company might be tracking the number of quotes that they get, but not the number of sales that are made off of that quote. And that is a real example that I have encountered before. And so if you're not tracking final sales and you're only tracking quotes, that is going to skew behavior within the company. I mean, another time once I worked with a company who were tracking leads, which is the same, I guess, as quotes, you know, leads rather than the number of sales being made. And the result is they would do anything to get a lead, but, you know, and basically lie to people or, well, no, that's a bit extreme. They didn't lie to people.
And what was the name of this company, Paul?
But, it was like, you know, oh, we'll make this look as rosy and lovely as possible, you know, just to get the lead out of it, even if it doesn't then turn into a sale. And you see this kind of stuff happening all the time. So that's one part of the problem. And the other part of the problem is what's called the McNamara fallacy. And that is basically that we, yeah, I know, it makes me sound clever, that the McNamara fallacy. I could have just made that up. Nobody would know. And basically, this is the premise that we have a tendency to measure things that are easy to measure, right? So, for example, on a website, it's much easier to measure the number of leads coming through because that can all be done through the contact us form on the website. But measuring the number of those leads that convert, that requires back-end systems in place and that kind of thing. And the McNamara fallacy basically says we measure what's easy, and not in, instead of what matters. And the result of that is we only focus on the things we're measuring. And the things we're measuring are the easy things. So we need to be focusing on meaningful metrics, not just kind of the easy ones to measure. So meaningful metrics are things like lifetime customer value, you know, is a really good metric, but it's a tricky bugger to measure.
What does that mean, Paul? Lifetime customer value.
Well, let's take, for example, Headscape as an example of that. So in Headscape, you could look at the current clients you've got going in and go, oh, that client there, they're worth 50 grand, right? You know, or 100 grand or whatever.
As opposed to the one that we've been working with for 20 years that's worth 2 million overall, say.
Yes, okay, exactly. Yeah, okay. So... And of course, that brings me on to another really common problem, is that a lot of organizations are only focusing on short-term metrics, right? So we've all got our quarterly targets. And I'm just as bad at this. You know, I want to meet my target every month. And so I'm focused on that. But that tends to drive risky decisions, you know, short-term thinking. And UX in particular doesn't come off very well from that, because the benefits of UX are more around things like lifetime customer value, that customers stay with you for longer and that kind of stuff.
I've written here on my notes, Paul, this applies to sales. It might not be you make bad decisions from having a couple of bad months of sales, but it can make you feel bad or down and those kind of things. And you need to see the bigger picture. So it applies not just to metrics. That's another form of metric, isn't it? Money earned. But, you know, it's really true. You've got, but then I suppose equally you can get too kind of like, well, let's have a 10-year picture, and then you run out of money. So, but you do need
there's
to.
There's a balance there.
Yeah, there's a balance.
Yeah. But it is true. It is, so many companies are focused on short-term metrics and not thinking longer term. And as UX professionals in particular, I think we need to try hard to shift that thinking, because if you're always thinking on short-term metrics, then UX is never going to be particularly valuable to you. Mm. The other thing is a lot of companies just flat out misread their data. You know, the number of clients who, you know, pull a feature after 3 days because they've seen a dip in their metric. And it's like, well, just give users a chance to get used to this. Mm. One of the things that I always, always say to my clients now, because I've learned this, is look, wait 2 weeks, right? Whatever new thing you're rolling out, whether it be a new feature, a new website, and it, just ignore any feedback, any comments in the first 2 weeks, because everybody will freak the hell out because it were breaking their procedural knowledge. They're breaking the way that they've learnt it. Mm. Give 2 weeks and everything will settle down and return to normal. And that's when you can start measuring things. So it's that kind of thing. And that kind of leads, you know, to the overreacting to changes, you know, that, you know, people have this kind of very binary thing. The metric goes up, that's good. The metric goes down, that's bad. And so often they can kind of get these knee-jerk reactions. Oh, the metric's going in the wrong direction. Roll it back, go back to what we were, you know, and it's not healthy. So really we need to have a much more sophisticated approach to how we're using metrics within our organization. And the first thing I would recommend is don't rely on one magic number, right? So don't just focus on even something like lifetime customer value, right? One metric, if you've got one metric that you're constantly tracking and that is everything to you, you will skew every piece of work you do towards that one metric. So, you know, even if it's a good metric, like, I don't know, you know, the NPS score or something like that, if it's just one metric, you're only seeing part of the equation. And I tend to try and have at least three metrics, right? But I'll have a...
Does that apply even if your business is very simple e-commerce? You sell stuff. So surely the thing you care about is the number of things you sell.
No, because you care about the number of things you sell, your profit margin on each of those things you sell, how many of those things you sell, the average order value, you care about lifetime value. And that's just talking about conversion. Then you also care about usability, because if the usability isn't right, then that's going to affect your longer term sales. Right. Mm-hmm. You care about engagement, because if people aren't engaged with your content and your products, then they're never going to get as far as selling. So there's a lot more elements that make up the picture than you know, just yes. Mm-hmm. Some of those metrics will affect others and some are more important metrics than others. But if you don't measure the complete picture, you're not going to understand. Let's say you've got a master. If let's say, for example, you're right? All we care about is how many sales we make in a month, right? If you're not measuring things like usability and engagement alongside that, then you're not going to know how to increase that sales metric, right? Because you don't have enough data points. You don't understand, oh, it's because our usability's shit, right? And that's the problem there. So you need a range of metrics for it.
Okay.
I always try and have at least one conversion metric, one usability metric, and one engagement metric. That tends to be the way I think. And also, you need to plan your reaction times in. Like I, you know, said, agree on how long you're going to wait before reacting to new data. So I said a couple of weeks, but obviously it ranges depending on what you're going to have. And you also need to make sure that the metrics you're measuring do align not just with your short-term goals, but your long-term goals, right? So do these metrics reflect what's best for the business over the long term, right? So prioritizing metrics, say, around retention rather than flashy vanity metrics like, ooh, the number of visitors has gone up this week. Who gives a shit, you know? I also think the other thing I want to say is you've got to look beyond just metrics and consider the bigger picture. Numbers are not everything. Don't get me wrong, they're really important. I'm not saying if you work in data as a data analyst, don't write hate mail to me. I'm totally behind what you're doing, but it's not the whole picture. You also need qualitative insights as well, right? Metrics tell you what is happening in a situation, while qualitative research will tell you why that thing is happening. So you've got a high bounce rate. Well, if you interview people, you might discover why you've got a high bounce rate, you know?
Yep.
So then you also need to look at the type of metric that you're collecting and what you want to be doing with it, right? So many, universities, this happens a lot, right? That digital teams are providing, every month they send out analytic reports to the different schools across the and they always are things like, you know, bounce rate, the stuff that comes default in Google, basically, bounce rate, amount of traffic, that kind of thing. And you always got to ask yourself the question, well, what are they going to do with that metric?
Absolutely.
What's the point of it, right? So really, we need to pick metrics that are actionable, that we can actually do something with that knowledge. Otherwise, it's just, pointless. I'm also, setting your metrics within context is very good. So, for example, if I said to you, you've got a conversion rate of 3%. What's that? Is that
awesome?
Good? Is that, it's awesome, is it?
Shit.
Yeah, could be either, right? It will depend on your sector. It might depend on the time of year. It might depend on what you sell. It could depend on a whole number of factors. So you've got to consider like industry standards, historical data, what's going on with your competition. Obviously, you can improve against yourself over time, but that becomes progressively harder. I remember, do you remember when we started working with Wiltshire Farm Foods right at the beginning, right?
Yes.
So the e-commerce site this was. We had massive jumps in conversion rate to begin with because the site was in such a shocking state. So there was so much room for improvement that it was like... Easy wins. Every month it was shooting up. And of course, senior management ended up expecting that. But of course, as time went on, it was harder and harder and harder to move that needle. So you just got to be so careful over, you know, what expectations you're setting with metrics and how you place those metrics within the bigger context. The other thing I'd say is metrics aren't everything. Sometimes a judgment call is better. Data should inform your decisions, but don't discount intuition and experience, because those things do still matter. Someone who is experienced will recognize the value of metrics and having data, but they won't be constrained by that data.
It goes back to the how versus the why, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Experience really is, I've seen this how previously, so I know what to do.
Absolutely.
So trust that experience, definitely.
So that's really all I wanted to say. I know it's a bit of a whistle-stop tour, but I wanted to encourage people, A, to challenge the metrics that they're presented with, because a lot of us get given metrics that we've got to conform with, and you know, don't be afraid to push back on those and to challenge those. And secondly, maybe start introducing some metrics of your own that you're going to measure as well, because one of the other great things that I've learned is that if you present somebody with a needle that they've got to move and you're giving them those numbers, they want the numbers to go up, right? It's just human nature. So if you start delivering metrics around usability or engagement or other metrics, then people will start paying attention to those metrics, even if they're not the official metric, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there you go. Let's talk about reading. You've been reading, Marcus. I was shocked.
I know.
Tell me about what you've been reading.
Well, I realised that I actually potentially have a relevant article to share on the show. So it's taken 13 episodes to get
of,
here.
Of this season.
Of this season. That's not fair. I must have shared one in the other 800 episodes.
So what is it you've been reading?
I do like to have a read. So I'm not a big app explorer like you are, but I do read quite a bit. This is AI kind of related, which has obviously been a major theme over the past 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Basically, in my attempt at using new social media, I signed up to Blue Sky and occasionally I'll dip in. And I follow Jeremy Keith. I follow basically the same kind of people that I used to follow on Twitter. And Jeremy, old friend of the podcast that he was, basically shared an interesting article about all sorts of things. But one of the things that piqued my interest was he's not a big fan of AI. I mean, that's unfair. I think he is, but there are two issues that he has with it. One is that, to use his words, my feelings about large language models have been dominated by two massive elephants in the room. One is the completely unethical way that the training data has been acquired, he says, by ripping off the work of people who never gave their permission. And the other is the profligate energy usage in not just training these models, but also running queries in the network. But quickly to deal with the first one, I think that's probably fair, but I think, well, it's...
That horse has bolted, isn't it?
It's gone.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, what can you do? It's like, well, do you want to say I'm not going to use this in a sort of, you know, cut off your nose to spite your face kind of way, or do you just go, well, this stuff is for everyone now, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people will disagree with me over this, but you know, I very much see anything, you've got to have the attitude that anything you're publishing online that is not behind some kind of password protection is fair game, in my opinion. That's why I release everything that I've ever written has been released under Creative Commons license, because, well, what's the point about doing otherwise, really? You know, and for me, I'm perhaps, you know, I almost go back to Tim Berners-Lee and his attitude that the web is supposed to be this shared repository for everybody. And, you know, the whole of human knowledge brought together that is accessible to everybody, is available to everybody. I totally understand people disagreeing with me over that. I can't back that up in any way. That's just, you know, my mindset towards it. So it's not a big issue that concerns me personally that much. The second one, however...
I'll come on to the second one in just a minute, because as a musician or as a songwriter who's earned quite a lot of money over lifetime, I really do appreciate what other musicians and people who ended up running, you know, the collection agencies did for the likes of me. So... from that perspective, I guess I'm in the other camp, and I sort of think, well, if you've created something, you should be paid for it or recognised for it at least. And it's not the same thing. So it's but also I am also of the completely practical way of thinking that this is out of the box. Move on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and the I think the thing I come back to on that is that if it wasn't AI, right? If that was a person, we wouldn't have a problem with it, because you, as a magician, you know, you were inspired by other musicians, and you created something from that that was unique to you. And essentially, in most cases, that, you know, it is the underpinning of how AI works. It learns from lots of other people, and it produces new stuff. And yes, it is possible with very, very specific prompting and very convoluted methods to get it to regurgitate something it's seen on something on another site word for word. But that's not really primarily what it was doing. But
it's not what it's for either.
No.
So it's, anyway, let's move on. You're right.
Yeah, because it really is one of those topics that I think, you know, reasonable people can disagree over. You know?
Exactly. But the second point, I hadn't really realised. unlike the the huge amount of power that is required for mining Bitcoin, for example, which makes it all a bit unpleasant, is a little bit similar with AI. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realise that. But Jeremy then pointed out an article, which we'll share in the notes, that basically says its view is not negative one. This is an issue that needs to be sorted out, and it will be because it has to be. And there was a quote in the article which I was like, ooh, which reads, "And then it dawned on everyone that the rate limiting factor in the growth of AI was not going to be computer power, it was electrical power." And I was like, ooh. Okay, so we could be even further ahead with, the power of AI if we had a bit more power.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I entirely agree with that. I think the two, computing power and electrical power are the same thing, right? If the more computing power you add to it, the more expensive your power bills become. So it's a tricky one, that one. But you are entirely right. It's by far the biggest problem. If I understand it correctly, and this is not my area of expertise at all, but as far as I understand it, the primary cost, the biggest cost, is initially training the models, right? Mm-hmm. So don't think, for example, that every time you sit down and use ChatGPT, half the rainforest dies.
It's already dead.
Well, yeah, exactly. I don't. Excuse me. I might be wrong. Please, somebody correct me if I am wrong. I wish Michelle was here because she would know that kind of stuff. But I feel like that's where the biggest problem is. There are exceptions. I know some of the models are very intensive, even when you're just putting a command in. But that's a part of the thing to say. But no, absolutely, I think it's a problem that needs to be solved. And to be fair, it is something that they've already made enormous strides at. It is getting better. And I think everybody, unlike the first point, everybody is in agreement over this one, that it can't come at the cost of, environmental damage, etc. And I think there is a lot of work being, I know there's a lot of work being done in that area.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Yeah, it is interesting. And actually, The article that I wanted to mention today is actually one of my own articles, because I've been writing a lot about AI. And really, I sat down. So this is what happened with me over it. I was thinking, well, what is the future of us, for us, user experience designers with AI?
Hmm.
Well, and will we have jobs? Will there be a place for our kind of stuff? And for me, it kind of splits into two areas. There's the benefits at the moment of AI are huge for us because, there are great testing tools. There are all these amazing things, etc. But when we look forward to the future, do websites exist in the same way? And is there a work to be done for us as user experience people? And I ended up concluding that actually it's pretty rosy, because I think that actually at the moment AI is fairly shit from a user experience point of view, right?
I just got to jump in, Paul, because I was trying to find it. Paul Edwards shared on your Slack channel this morning a joke, which was, in order to replace creatives with AI, clients will need to accurately describe what they want. We're safe, people.
Yeah, but what I was particularly, and it's very true and very accurate. And yes, I do think we're absolutely fine. But that's more in the sense of, well, an AI is going to be like an intern. We're going to work with it. It's still going to need a lot of instructions and that kind of stuff. But I was interested in AI itself and the user experience of interacting with AI, because I think this is a really interesting area. And I think AI is fairly shit at the moment. For example, from a pure interface point of view, it is pretty ropey. When you use ChatGPT, for example, you have to select your model, right? Well, who knows what a model is, you know, and how they work. And then when you select one model, this piece of functionality disappears. Suddenly you can't search because you've selected this model. And you know, you can't, it's really fiddly about how to create your own custom GPTs. And how, what is that anyway? And what's the difference between a custom GPT and a project? And the user interface is shit, basically. But that's fine. That's we know how to solve problems like that. And this product is going through the same life cycle as every new piece of technology. That first of all, you're just impressed that it can do anything and it goes, wow, it, you know, works. Then they add shit tons of features, which is where we're at the moment, where they're, you know, now it can look at images. Now it can create audio. Now it can do this. Now it can do that. And then the third stage is always how to make it more easy and pleasant to use. So that's fine. That's normal technology stuff. But where it gets interesting is in AI agents, right? And literally yesterday at time of recording, right? My post went out at midday at about 8 p.m. UK time. OpenAI made an announcement that they're releasing their first AI agent. An AI agent, in case you don't know, obviously you know, Marcus, I'm talking to the listener at home. An AI agent is something that can go away, control a browser, and just do a task like a human, right? Yeah. So that then throws up all kinds of user experience issues, right? About, for example, you know, how often does it interrupt us with questions about, oh, am I doing this right? Should I do this? So that the example that I'm that sprung to my mind is my wife, right? That there are some things that my wife cares deeply about and some things she doesn't, right? So if I was the AI and my wife said to me, go and buy me some bread, right? Now, I know as a human that I need to ask my wife specifically what type of bread she wants, right? Because she's very opinionated about her bread. And, you know, and all of these other kind of questions, you know, and when I'm looking at the different bread options, I need to go back to her and say, is this the right one? But if it was, oh, will you buy me a mouse, right? Something I, as a person, would care deeply about, she don't give a shit. She doesn't want to be interrupted over that. She just wants me to get her a mouse. And so there's a level of understanding that AI has to have about the person to know how much to interact them. But then there's also another layer, which is a kind of understanding of the thing that they're being asked to do. So if you were being asked to book a holiday for somebody, right? I want you to book me a holiday to Greece, you know, with an all-inclusive thing under this price, etc. It needs to be intelligent enough to go, well, this is a big, complicated thing. And, you know, I'm going to need a lot of clarification around this, like a human would, right? So it needs to understand the size and complexity and importance of a task, whatever that task is. And then the final layer is to understand the nuances of the world and the items in the world it's going to have to interact with. So, for example, smart fridges. This is the newest thing. It just blows my mind. I mean, have you seen these fridges?
These are the ones that have order your food for you.
Yeah. Right. But they also, they normally have a screen which has got a camera that shows you what's inside so you don't have to open the door. What a pointless thing to create. Anyway, that's going off on a tangent. But yeah, let's take, so it's looking at your food, looking at what's getting low, seeing what's coming in and out, right? And that takes an incredible degree of nuance, right? So for example, you put a lettuce in, right? And it hasn't seen you take a lettuce out. Right. So the lettuce is fine. You don't need lettuce. Well, lettuce goes off. Right. Yeah. So it's going to need to know how quickly lettuce goes off. OK. Or Marmite. Not that you'd keep Marmite in the fridge necessarily, but they see the pot going in and out lots. OK. But you only use a tiny amount of Marmite. Mm. So there's a huge number of user experience issues that kind of relate to AI, both in terms of its understanding of the world, its understanding of people, its understanding of people's attitudes towards different things, that there is so much work, I think, to be done for as user experience people in this area. And you might think, oh, well, you're only going to need a handful of people to work on these large language models at companies like OpenAI. So we're never going to be in a situation where, you know, that's not going to be work for me. Well, no, because AI is going to get baked in to every website, every application, everything you're using everywhere. So you're going to have to solve these kind of complex projects. You might be working for Samsung, working on a fridge, right? Or you might be working for, stocks and shares. AI is amazing with stocks and shares, really good at it. But there'll be some people that will want lots of control and will want everything clarified, and others that won't. And there'll be things like that. So, yeah, I wrote this article really as a kind of encouragement that there's lots of work for us to do, and we're not going to all end up without jobs, even if clients were capable of expressing what they actually wanted, which they're not. So there you go. My latest rabbit hole that I've got sucked down. I like this kind of shit. Hey, we got a question from a real listener, not even one I've made up.
I didn't read this. I clearly got bored of reading the notes. Right, this is like a surprise. Go on, then.
This is surprise. It's from Sarah G. Oh, we know Sarah G.
Yeah, we worked with Sarah, yeah.
Yeah, she said, in an age where literally every tool in the box requires a subscription, how do companies of one, A, decide what they really need, and B, fund them all? Which I thought was a good question. Really practical.
Take the same approach. I do take this approach as I do with TV subscriptions of...
Oh, go on then.
Basically, keep a spreadsheet of what you've signed up for, and put dates in when you signed up for them and when you think you're going to want to unsign up, unsubscribe even, and put calendar... reminders on those dates to say, do you still need this? And that way you can afford a lot more than just signing up for everything.
Yeah. I you're absolutely right. I think it's so easy to lose track of what you've got that and then you just end up spending things and you're not really even aware. You know, I've been in the, before I started doing the same thing you just said, I remember times where I went, shit, I'm paying for that still. It's like, I don't use that anymore, you know.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Headscape does that. I'm bound to. It's usually the kind of UX-related or testing software or testing apps, that kind of stuff. And you think, we've got more than one thing that does this, and we're paying for both of them.
And that actually brings me on to another thing I do, is that I look for apps that are versatile, that can do a lot of things rather than... I like specialist apps for certain things. I'm a total contradiction here.
You're contradicting yourself here, Paul.
Yes, I am, because I have said before, you know, that I don't like these platforms that try and do everything and they don't do anything well.
That's from a cost perspective, though, I believe.
Yeah, from a cost perspective, there is a benefit to having a small number of apps that are versatile and can be used in different ways. I'm thinking of Notion, right? Yeah. I know you hate Notion, but one of the reasons
I don't
love
Notion. It's just good fun to just sort of, you know, make out I don't.
Yeah. Because Notion is flexible and I can use it for project. Like, I did used to have a separate customer relationship management system, right? And a project management software. And I realized I could do it all in Notion. So why am I paying these extra subscriptions? So I do that a lot. Mm. The other thing that I would advise is not to get sucked into the yearly discounts that they offer, but instead pay for it monthly, which may feel like it's more expensive. But in my experience, there's always better products coming along that are more cost effective and more versatile or whatever else. So absolutely be very careful. You have to be pretty sure it's an app you want all the time if you're going to go for the yearly discount. The only one I do that with is my email client, because that I send out my newsletter with, because I'm tied into that now so badly that I couldn't go anywhere else easily if I wanted to. The other thing that I do is I consider, okay, if I didn't have this tool, how long would it take me to do it through other means? Because ultimately that's what it comes down to, especially somebody running your own business, is like the amount of time you're spending doing a thing is chargeable time, right? So often it's cheaper to, I've got a lot of tools, right? And I do begrudge every penny every month of all of them. But I do know that if I didn't have those, I would end up sinking more time into it. So that's the other aspect of it. But yeah, that's basically it. I mean, beyond the obvious kind of, could you operate without it kind of question, in which case, get rid of it. But yeah.
Well, the final one is obviously listen to the BOAG World podcast so that you're kept up to date with the latest apps.
Because I have to play with every new thing that comes along.
It's actually, that is actually sensible advice.
I tell you what, more important question is, what streaming services do you pay for these days? I want to know which ones you've got.
At the moment, I Netflix and Apple.
I dumped,
I've discovered Severance. I tried watching Severance when it first came out, and I'm like, nah, after about 10 minutes. And then I thought, I'm going to give this another go, and it's probably the best thing I've ever seen.
It's so good.
Superb. Anyway, so that's on Apple. Netflix, just watched something on Netflix that was good as well. Oh,
Netflix, I've got rid of.
Black Doves, that's worth worth a watch. I enjoyed that very much. Again, good acting. I've dumped Amazon Prime. I still pay the Prime, but I, you know, the TV aspect of it.
And well, get it for free as part of Prime.
No, but you, all right, Paramount Plus or whatever, the kind of ones.
The add-ons. No, I'm bothered with those.
And I've dumped the Sport Channel at the moment because that's the most expensive one, and there isn't any sport on. Why pay 20 quid a month?
And that's actually another good piece of advice, going back to Sarah's question, is there's a lot of apps that I only use when I need them. So for example, today I had to sign up because I wanted to do some user testing. So I signed up for 1 month. I then immediately unsubscribed from it so I wouldn't forget, right? But I still get the month I've paid for, and then I use it for a month, and I probably won't use it again for another 6 months or a year or whatever, you know?
Yeah, basically it's a bit of a pain in the bum. There's got to be there must be an app out there to manage your subscriptions.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
Well, use one of those. There you go, done.
All right, Marcus, what's your joke? Let's finish this baby off.
Okay, this is from Sandra at Headscape. Sandra Cohen.
Oh!
Hello, there Sandra. You go. I'm giving my chimney away for free. You could say it's on the house.
Oh, that's terrible. That is shocking and bad.
The play on words, punny ones, are the ones that you really don't like. So it always makes me giggle more whenever I have one of those.
Yeah. It's also because it's not even a very clever play on words.
Work for me. Which is why I pick them up every night. I gave you a proper joke last week, so that's...
You did. And I was disappointed with that as well. I don't like proper jokes because, you know, I expect these bad jokes.
Yeah.
I want them to be bad, so, you know. Okay, so that's it for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you found it useful, and you will join us again in a couple of weeks. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.